Welcome back. I'm trying something different real quick with this one, so I'm only gonna do like a probably like a chapter or so. I'm gonna try just holding the microphone and see if that helps with my sound quality, keeping my voice closer to the microphone. But I'm also worried that this thing picks up every noise around me, so every time like the wires hanging from it make a sound, I think you're gonna hear it. I apologize for background noise. I'm filming in the daytime, so my child's up and running around doing her thing, and I'm gonna let that be. I can hear my mouth, like, I got covers over the microphone trying to kill some of that noise, but it just, psh, I don't seem to be able to. I think it's just the microphone. My microphone sucks so bad. It's a $12 microphone off of Amazon, so you get what you pay for. You really do. When I get my tax return, I'm gonna go get one of those, the blue ones that they sell at Fred Meyer's and like Best Buy. I'm gonna go grab one of those guys, one of their $70 ones, and hopefully that will eliminate a lot of the weird sounds that I mean, just make it clearer. I don't know. I'm just gonna keep trying. This podcast is really just for me. I don't know who else is listening to this, but because it's the Bible, I'm not stopping. I'm going to get this done. I really want to read and finish this thing, so that's just what it's going to be. I got another little clip for the end of this, too. It's a great response to anyone trying to tell you how you need to address them, or gender them, or anyone demanding that you do change the way that you think or do whatever, you know what I mean? So we'll see how you feel after you hear that. Cause I think it's pretty cool. I think it's a great response, almost to just parrot anytime someone starts saying those kind of things to you, like, you need to address me this way or identify me as this. The response at the end should help you with what you could say to somebody if they're having a meltdown in front of you and you're just done with it. So anyway, Numbers chapter 17. And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and take from each of them a rod for a father's house, from all the rulers for the house of their fathers, 12 rods." Is that because there's 12 tribes? "You shall write the name of each on his rod, and you shall write Aaron's name on the tribe of Levi, for one rod shall be for the head of their father's house. And you shall place them in the tabernacle of the congregation before the testimony, where I shall meet with you. And it shall be that the man's rod which I choose shall blossom, and I shall cause the murmurings of the sons of Israel, which they are murmuring against you, to cease from me." And Moses spoke to the sons of Israel, and all their rulers gave to him one rod for each ruler, and one rod for a ruler. And all their rulers gave to him one rod for each ruler, one rod for a ruler, for their father's house, 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among the rods. And Moses placed the rods before Jehovah in the tabernacle of the testimony. And it happened on the next day, Moses went into the tabernacle of the testimony, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi had budded, and put forth buds, and bloomed blossoms, and bore ripe almonds. Oh, almonds. And Moses brought out all the rods from before Jehovah to all the sons of Israel. You know, it's, I don't know, could you have guessed it was going to be Aaron's? You know, based on everything that's happened and where Jehovah's kind of holds the esteem of Moses and his kids. And they looked, and each one took his rod. And Jehovah said to Moses, "Put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a token. You shall take their murmurings off me, and they shall not die." And Moses did as Jehovah had commanded him, so he did. And the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, "Behold, we die, we perish, we all perish. Anyone who draws near to the tabernacle of Jehovah shall die. Shall we be consumed to die?" Now, that's a question. Shall we be consumed to die? Well, that's, I'm not sure what that means. That means less people can come around the tabernacle now, only the family of Aaron, instead of like that whole tribe they had doing it. I'm not sure. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Hey, lay down. Sorry, my dog thinks right now is the time to start picking at her her kennel, which she puts herself in. It's got a door on it, but it's wide open. I don't know why. We got her the kennel for moving her around, and she turned it into a doghouse. It became her safe space, which is wild. Most dogs don't want to go in kennels. You know what I mean? Like, they can. I've had dogs that would know the difference between like a dog igloo and a kennel. They'd love the igloo, but they would not go in a kennel, right? Same color, shapes aren't too off. One's got a door, one doesn't, but they know. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times, if you're putting a dog in a kennel, you're taking them somewhere like a vet or something that they probably don't want to go. And mine does not. Boy, that kennel's the first spot she wants to run to at any sign of anything. She's a really sweet dog. Like, she can be aggressive. She's a black lab, German Shepherd mix. She can be aggressive, but just by nature, she's not. The little dogs, there's one here at our apartment complex that literally attacked her. Almost tore one of her little toes off. I don't know what you call them on their paw, but literally, like, removed the her nail, and half of the, you know, the meaty part that it grows out of was just, it was hanging. had to, you know, get that fixed or whatnot. So, but she didn't react. She didn't react. She'll run outside and fight a pit bull, no problem. She will fight a dog her size, no problem. But little dogs, she's got an unbelievable amount of temperament with. So, and she's like that with their kids, everything. She's just a little excitable. She likes to jump up. I don't keep her nails trimmed like I should, but she is. I'm extremely lucky to have such a sweet and caring dog. Okay, I did that chapter. That was really short. I wasn't expecting it to be that short. So I'm going to jump through 18, which is much longer. And let's do that. Numbers, chapter 18. And Jehovah said to Aaron, "You and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear the iniquity of the sanctuary. And you and your sons with you shall bear the iniquity of your priesthood. And also your brothers, the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, you shall bring near with you, that they may be joined to you and may minister to you, you and your sons in your being before the tabernacle of the testimony. And they shall keep your charge and the charge of all the tabernacle, only they shall not go near to the vessels of the sanctuary and to the altar, and they shall not die, either they or you, and they shall be joined to you and shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of the congregation for all the service of the tabernacle, and a stranger shall not go near to you. And you shall keep the charge of the sanctuary and the charge of the altar, and there shall be no more wrath against the sons of Israel. And I, behold, I have taken your brothers, the Levites, from the midst of the sons of Israel. As a gift, they are given to you by Jehovah to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And you and your sons with you shall keep your priesthood and everything that perhaps or pertains to the altar and to that inside the veil. And you shall serve. I have given you the priesthood as a service of gift, and the stranger who comes near shall be put to death." That's wild. That's crazy. They do say, though, that like the Ark of the Covenant or whatnot has some type of, or at least, you know, it's probably all lies, but what they have in our history says that it's like radiated or something, and anyone that's near it will die. Anyone that tries to look in it will surely die. There's even, you know, rabbit holes you can go down where they believe like the three main pyramids in Gaza, they aren't adorned like all the tombs and the other thing. They don't have hieroglyphs in them. None of that stuff's in those three pyramids. Like when you, especially the main one, when you see a lot of Egyptian stuff, like the statues, the writings, you see, you know, people walking around inside the buildings and there's all those hieroglyphs and just all that stuff. You know what I mean? None of that exists inside those pyramids. And I don't think most people know that. I think that it's all so slammed together that it's just assumed, but no, especially that large one. There's no carvings or writings in that thing at all. It's just got chambers and shafts, and if you go down the rabbit hole, people think it was a power device, some type of energy device, and they think that the Ark of the Covenant sat in the middle of it, in the king's chamber, that's what that was for, that there's all kinds of, you know, ideas. There was maybe a river of mercury underneath it. Mercury on its own just kind of flows. It, when you get it going in a circle or whatnot, can create energy. So if you had a river flowing through it and had, like, I don't know, a whirlpool in there at some point, maybe you were generating energy. I mean, there's
there's 5-6 different rabbit holes you can go down on what was happening with that pyramid, and none of them will take you to a tomb or praying or any of the things that, you know, Egypt wants you to believe those were for. And it's not based off of, you know, speculation. It's based off of all the other monuments and things around Egypt compared to those specific structures and what's not in them. You know what I mean? Like all the jewels and the, you know, dead bodies, and like there was apparently no dead bodies in that thing. There's no, it's not a tomb. So anyway, that's, I'm going off course here. We're still on chapter 18. We're in verse 8 now. And Jehovah spoke to Aaron, saying, "And I, behold, I have given to you the charge of my heave." Oh. Let me start that. I started reading that like that. Wasn't it? And Jehovah spoke to Aaron, saying, "And I, behold, I have given to you the charge of my heave offerings. Of all the dedicated things of the sons of Israel, I have given them to you for the anointing, and to your sons by a never-ending statute. This shall be yours of the most holy things." Sorry, I had to slow that down. Some of these words are so close to God. I've just complained about this so many times, but it is what it is, and whatever. If you hear me stumbling like that, it's likely because I'm dealing with something. I'm not looking at just, you know, your standard text. There's some typos and some spacing errors that I run into them, and I have to like stop, look at it, figure out what it is, and that's generally when I go back and reread that sentence, because I now understand what it's trying to say. It's actually really neat to have so many typos and errors in this, because it really does humanize this book when you're reading it. I know for a fact that somebody literally wrote all these pages, like typed all these pages out. It's not a machine didn't print this. You know what I mean? These are each typed out. It tells you at the beginning of the book that these books are, you know, typed by individual scribes. It says who the scribe is, stuff like that. I'm not even supposed to have this book. I ordered this Bible through Amazon. And the day that it arrived, the day that it showed up on my door, I got a call from a representative at Amazon that told me they were going to refund me the money for the Bible. And I'm holding it in my hand, and I'm like, "Wait, what?" She's like, "Yeah, we can't send you that. The edition or the version of the Bible that I bought was for, it's only supposed to be sold to like universities and to churches, like people that are much higher up the scale than I am. So apparently the public isn't supposed to get this book." But I got it, and I told them I got it, and she was like, "Oh, they did send it to you?" That she was looking at her queue saying it says that it's still somewhere, and they put a stop on it. And I'm like, "Well, God must have wanted me to have this book, because I got it." And I told them, I won't accept a refund. Like, a lot of times Amazon will call you with an error like that, and you'll be like, "Yeah, in my favor." But because it was the Bible, I was like, "No, look, I'm not going to not pay for this. I got it. I want you to keep the money. Note that I do have it. And if there's a problem with that, please have, you know, whoever doesn't want me to have it, send me. You're free to, you have my permission to give them, you know, my information, have them write me or whatever. And if they want to purchase the book back from me or give me a good reason that would cause me to want to give it back, I would understand that. But as is, this is a purchase I made. I paid for it. It's legal. I have it in my possession, and I'm not going to just, you know, send it back to Amazon and be like, "Oh, it didn't work out." No, I wanted the Bible. This is the specific one I wanted, and I got it. Even though there was something at play during that process that was trying to keep me from getting it, and Amazon was all about it. It's weird. It's not very, I mean, I don't know if you've dealt with Amazon a lot, but that was the only time in my Amazon dealings that Amazon unprompted called me about one of my orders and told me there was a problem and that I wouldn't be receiving it. So, yeah. And that is a plane. If you hear that in the back, I can hear it in my headphones, so I'm sure you guys are going to hear it. I'm in Ellensburg, Washington. There's an airport really close to me, and they got like commercial flights, and all those planes come in and out in one direction. And then they got, you know, their little planes. They all come in this other direction now, and they just changed this a couple of years ago, but all the little planes fly directly over our complex now, which is fun, because, you know, 30 times a day you hear that. I'd almost rather hear the jets
five times a day as opposed to hearing that, but whatever. Half those little planes you hear right there are like firefighting planes and stuff like that. We do. I just want to put this out there. We do. I would say in the last year, it's picked up a lot. We have a lot of military activity in and out of that airport and flying above us and around us, and they all fly very low. I've seen jets. I've seen military helicopters that look like they have armament on it. And I've always been under this understanding that the military is not supposed to fly vehicles with missiles and things like that over the general public. I'm not sure where I got that or how accurate that is, to be honest, but that's what I've always understood. And you can see missiles on these jets and on these helicopters without a doubt, so they have ordnance on them. So I don't know if something changed or what that is, but they fly really low. They're keeping under the radar. And we're really close to very close to what's called Indian Ridge, which is a huge military base in Washington State. If you don't know about it, it's like it's an Area 50. It's like Dulce or like Area 51. Huge. You can't get to it. It's all on the foothills out here on the eastern side of the Cascade Mountain Range, and it all goes into the mountains. Like, they are underground as you can get. So, and you can't go out there. They got those sensor devices out in the grounds everywhere, just like they have in what do you call it? Area 51. I need just a second. That noise you hear in the background is my daughter playing with a toy that she shouldn't have right now. I just gave her a tablet. So give me 1 second.
Hey. Daddy's on the phone. No, too loud. Too loud.
Okay. Sorry about that. My ex-wife gave her these, I don't even know what you call them. They look like straws that are corrugated so they collapse and expand, and they make this noise. It sounds like duct tape. Like, she's constantly ripping duct tape off of something. She's autistic, so it's a sensory thing, but she's gone crazy over this thing. I listen to it all day long, and I don't mind her playing with it, just right now I can't handle it in the background, because I don't even know if you guys are going to hear it, but I can hear it really loud, and it's not something she needs to be doing while playing with a tablet. One or the other, dude. Let's get this figured out. I totally lost where I was. I just went off on another tangent. Okay, by never-ending statutes, this shall be yours of the most holy things. Is that where I was? Sons, I've given them to you for the anointing. Let's start this sentence, or this one over, right? Had I done 8 yet? Comes near, should we put it up? Okay, starting over, verse 8. Sorry, I just keep sidetracking myself. Jehovah spoke to Aaron, saying, And I, behold, I have given to you the charge of my heave offerings, of all the dedicated things of the sons of Israel. I have given them to you for the anointing, and to your sons by a never-ending statute. This shall be yours of the most holy things from the fire, every offering of theirs, even every food offering of theirs, and every sin offering of theirs, and every guilt offering of theirs, which they may render to me. It shall be the most holy to you and to your sons. You shall eat it in the holy of holies. Every male shall eat it. It shall be holy to you. And this is yours, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings. Sons of Israel. Oh, they put a gap there. Oh, that's the first time I've seen that. There's just an unnecessary, it's like the chapter's ending and going to a new one, but it's not. It's right in the middle of a sentence. Starting on verse 11 in chapter 18 in this book. And this is yours, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings. And then it's just, boom, gap. Like, that's the end of it. But it's sons of Israel. He's talking to the sons of Israel. And it's going to keep going here for a while. That's an odd thing they did there. Somebody hit the return button and didn't mean to. I've given them to you, and to your sons, and to your daughters with you, by a never-ending statute. Every clean one in your house shall eat it. And all the best of the oil, and all the best of the new wine, and wheat, the first fruits of them which they give to Jehovah, I have given to you. The first fruits of all that is in their land, which they bring into Jehovah shall be yours. Every clean one in your house shall eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. Everyone opening a womb of all flesh which they offer to Jehovah among man and among animal shall be yours. Only you shall certainly redeem the firstborn of man, and you shall redeem the firstling of the unclean beasts. And their redeemed ones, from a month old, you shall redeem with your valuation of silver 5 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. It is 20 gerahs. But the firstling of a cow, or the firstling of a sheep, or the firstling of a goat, you shall not redeem. They are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar, and you shall burn their fat as incense, a fire offering of soothing fragrance to Jehovah. And their flesh shall be yours, as the beast of the wave offering, and as the right leg it shall be yours. All the heave offerings of the holy things which the sons of Israel shall lift up to Jehovah, I have given to you and to your sons, and to your daughters with you, by a never-ending statute. A covenant of salt, it shall be forever before Jehovah to you and to your seed with you. And Jehovah said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. And behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel to the sons of Levi for an inheritance in return for their service which they are serving, the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the sons of Israel shall not come near to the tabernacle of the congregation any more, lest they bear sin and die. Oh. So just the Levites then. Huh. But the Levites shall do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a never-ending statute throughout your generations, that in the midst of the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. But the tithes of the sons of Israel, which they shall lift up to Jehovah, a heave offering, I have given to the Levites for inheritance. Therefore I have said to them, they shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, and you shall say to the Levites, and you shall speak to them, when you take to the tithe from the sons of Israel, which I have given to you from them, for your inheritance, then you shall offer from it a heave offering of Jehovah, a tithe of the tithe. And your heave offering shall be counted to you as grain from the threshing floor, and as fullness from the winepress. So also shall lift up the heave. Wait. So you also shall lift up the heave offering of Jehovah from all your tithes which you receive from the sons of Israel. And you shall give from it the heave offering of Jehovah to Aaron the priest. You shall lift up the whole heave offering of Jehovah out of all your gifts, out of all of its hallowed part out of it. And you shall say to them, when you lift up its fat out of it, then it shall be counted to the Levites as incense of a threshing floor, and as increase of a winepress. Man, that, let me just read that again, because that sounded so disjointed. And you shall say to them, when you lift up its fat out of it, then it shall be counted to the Levites as increase of a threshing floor, and as increase of a winepress. And you shall eat in it every place. Is that how that says? You shall eat in every place, you and your households, for it is your reward in return for your service in the tabernacle of the congregation. And you shall bear no sin because of it, since you have set apart from it the best of it. And you shall not profane the holy thing of the sons of Israel, so that you may not die. Can I get there? We're going to keep rolling. Chapter 19. Jehovah spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, this is the statute of the law which Jehovah has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you a red heifer, a perfect one, in which there is no blemish, on which no yoke ever came. And you shall give her to Eleazar, the priest, and she shall be brought forth outside the camp and shall be slaughtered before his face. That's crazy. So the red heifer thing, right? There's that, you know, war going on over there in Israel with Hamas, and our news media here in America won't tell you this, but if you look at pretty much anywhere else and you get down to the brass tacks of why Hamas attacked Israel, It's because they got 5 red heifers. 4 of them, I guess, are usable. But they got them from Texas, and they brought them there, and they built the altar to sacrifice them on. That's why that thing with Hamas happened. They're trying to stop what they believe is Israel's attempt to bring on Armageddon, to bring the Antichrist forward. Because I believe, now we're going to get there when we get to Revelations, and we've got a long ways to go to get there, so I really need to, I need to speed this up, because that's where I think we are in that little season, in that end period of Revelations. But as I understand it now, and I could be corrected by this book as we go, but as I understand it now, the red heifers need to be sacrificed. Their ashes are used somehow in the building of the third temple. Once the third temple is erected, I don't know if they have to destroy the Dome of the Rock or if it's just built on the same area as the Dome of the Rock. But that's either way, you know, erecting that temple or destroying the other one's going to create probably a war. But once that third temple is erected, the two witnesses are to show up, and then whoever the Antichrist is, he's going to show up on. He's going to, you know, we're going to find out who that is, because that individual is supposed to go to that temple and kill the witnesses out in front of the temple, and then go inside, sit on the throne, declare himself God. So that's wild, absolutely wild. And I can't help but think we got this whole demonic or demon face disorder that they got going on out there. The faces that they're showing you that these things are supposed to, you know, you might witness, look a lot like the old gargoyle and different faces that you see on buildings and in old, you know, text when they're talking about demons and things like that. 1 second. Sorry, the fridge turned on right behind me and it just started rattling in my ear. I just cut that off. But so with that all going on, okay, I've been thinking about this because they've got this whole alien narrative going on over here in worldwide too, right? So we've got like a biblical narrative that seems to be playing out right in front of us, and we've got this alien agenda that seems to be playing out right in front of us. And I even wrote this down. Let me grab what I wrote down so I can say this the way I'm meaning to. We're going to get away from this side tangent in just a second. Let me just pop this out and I'll get right back to the Bible. But so I was thinking this. I was thinking this about like the alien invasion idea and about like the what's going on in Israel. And lay down! What's going on in Israel, and she, I don't know if I just said a word that made her think that she was going to get something, but she just started getting excited right there, and let her own know. All that noise you hear are her nails on that, in that kennel, because I don't clip her nails. I want her to have them when she's running. There's a big difference in the way she moves when she has, like, long nails and when she doesn't, so. But it's extremely distracting and annoying if you're trying to record, and that's all you can hear in the background is your dog not doing anything but making a bunch of noise. Ah, great coffee. Okay, so anyway, real quick, just as a side tangent, I was thinking about the alien invasion and the third temple situation going on over there, the red heifers and whatnot, and I was thinking, what if an alien invasion is just a diversion designed to keep us all busy and distracted while they raise the third temple and the two witnesses show up? The temple and the two witnesses' death, as well as the Antichrist and his declaration, you know, who the Antichrist is and his declaration is God, will be under a media blackout. You won't know any of that's going on. Why won't you know that's going on? Because you'll be dealing with an alien, a false flag alien invasion. They're going to distract the whole world into thinking that we're being attacked and we got to come together while this is going on. So you're not going to know that there's two witnesses. You're not going to know that somebody showed up and killed them, and you're not going to know that somebody went in the temple and declared themselves God. They don't need to broadcast that, and they're not going to, because that would tip off almost all of Earth that this is real, this is happening, and it kind of tells you what the, if you know the Bible, you know what's coming, what's happening, and what's going on, and they don't want you to know that. And there's a guy that's got a channel called Understanding Conspiracy. I think the guy's name's Paul. Redheaded guy, really cool. I've been watching his channel for a while, and it's really blowing up right now. He's been focusing on the millennial reign and that the Nephilim looked like clowns. He's got a whole series on that. It's super interesting. If you've never heard of that, you should go check it out. It's called Understanding Conspiracy. He's on YouTube. It is great. shoot, I just forgot my train of thought while I was bringing him up. Darn it. Anyway, he talks about a lot of this stuff. I'll figure this out when I listen to this back. Like, oh, you were going there and you just totally forgot about it. But anyway, it'll be under a media blackout. I don't think that you're going to know any of this stuff is going on. I don't think they'll tell you. I will be dealing with like an alien invasion. Oh, that's where I was going with that. With Paul and the Understanding Conspiracy. He talks about the Campus Saints. And that like when maybe it's Gog and Magog when they show up on scene. Or the four angels gather the armies. Or some kind of army situation. I don't have it very well in my head. I just know it's at the end. They're supposed to go and attack the Campus Saints. And that battle's like the Battle of Armageddon. That's like a real end time scenario there. And Revelations or whatnot. So he talks about that more being that, like a sign that that's going to happen. Because what would happen initially, okay, so if we don't know and we're dealing with an alien invasion, right? And we're under a media blackout, once completed, once he's killed the saints and gone in there and done that, right? And you don't know, like once the Antichrist has completed this, no one will know who he is. You won't have seen it on the, you'll know nothing about this. You're going to be dealing with an alien invasion or something like that, right? And this Antichrist could just pop up on the scene with God knows what. It is some great ruler with some great plan, and it's going to be like demonic powers. You're not going to know that, but he's going to be able to do things to stop this alien invasion. And, you know, plus it's a false flag. So there's probably a plan to die it down, too, once this stuff with the Antichrist has been done and we have him here and they know who he is, but we don't, right? So I guess what I'm saying is... I think the whole alien agenda thing and that all of that isn't a distraction to start a one world government. The Antichrist is going to do that anyway, right? So I think it's something that they'll perpetrate on us so we don't see the Antichrist. We don't see the two witnesses. I think those are going to be under a complete media blackout. And then, you know, the Antichrist, he'll come out of that. You won't know he's the Antichrist, and he'll save everything. He'll stop the alien invasion. You're all going to be like, oh my God, he's the greatest. It's him. You know, he's our king. And we'll become a one world government because you'll need to unify. What if this happens again? We don't want to be caught with our pants down, right? So he'll be our one world leader. And then he'll amass his armies. When the Campus Saints is moving, he'll probably try to make that sound like it's a new... alien invasion when Jesus is coming with the armies to, you know what I mean? And you're going to go fight Jesus and his people because you're going to think they're aliens, right? Like you wonder in the Bible how that happens. How why would all these armies go attack Jesus? Well, because they don't know it's Jesus, right? They got this guy, the Antichrist, that just saved everyone and created all these, they think he's Jesus. They think Jesus has returned. And that he's going to help them fight off. They're going to think the aliens are the demons. You know what I mean? And it's everything's upside down backwards with Satan. So he's going to make you think that the Camp of Saints or whatnot and all those guys, he's going to make you think that those are the demons. And this Antichrist that showed up, that's Christ returning. Because the general narrative isn't that the millennial reign already happened. It's that Jesus is still coming back. I mean, he sat there and told people, we're going to get there in this book. But he tells the people when he's talking about coming back, that they're going to see him. It's them. Their eyes will witness him come from the clouds. Not 2,000 years from now. Not your, 100 generations from you. He tells them it's them. They are going to witness this. And after all that, we end up with this period in our history that's called the Dark Ages. I think that was the Golden Age. I think that was 1,000 years of millennial reign. And everything is just flipped upside down and backwards because that's what Satan does, right? So, but that's my opinion on that, I think. That's kind of where I'm laying with that right now. The whole alien invasion thing, that has nothing to do with getting us to become a one world government. That has everything to do with distracting you from realizing that there are two witnesses in front of a third temple and that someone just showed up and killed them, walked inside that thing and declared themselves God. You're not going to know that happened. You know, like anyone there, there's not, there won't be a TikTok video about it. There won't be a YouTube video about it. It's not going to be on X. It's not going to be on Instagram. It will not be shown. You won't know. If you're paying attention, you'll realize who this person is when he shows up as the savior that stopped the aliens. You're going to know that that's not the savior. This was all done and orchestrated on purpose. Anyway, I think I was on chapter 19. A red heifer, a perfect one, in which there is no blemish, on which no yoke ever came. And you shall give her... I just picked that right up, right, didn't I? Let me start over with the chapter, so like, if you were listening to that whole rant, you didn't just get lost. Because that's where I left off, was right after that heifer. But, and Jehovah spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, "This is the statute of the law which Jehovah has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, that they bring you a red heifer, a perfect one, in which there is no blemish, on which no yoke ever came. And you shall give her to Eleazar the priest, and you shall be brought forth outside the camp, and shall be slaughtered before his face. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger, and shall sprinkle of her blood toward the front of the tabernacle of the congregation 7 times. And the heifer shall be burned before his eyes. Her skin and her flesh..." They are saying her. "Her flesh and her blood with her dung shall be burned." So it was a heifer. Is that a female? The red heifer. I don't know that. I just thought heifer meant cow, but I wonder if that means a female cow, because they're referring to the heifer as her, and God doesn't identify things miscorrectly, right? We'll just say that. He's not into all that. That her is not going to turn to a he at any time in this story, right? Without like some absolute evil intervention. So. Anyway, yes, I'm taking a dig at that situation. "And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet, and shall cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. When the priest shall wash his clothes and shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he may come into the camp, and the priest shall be unclean until the evening. And he that burned her shall wash his clothes in water, and shall bathe his flesh in water, and shall be unclean until the evening. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, and shall lay them up outside the camp in a clean place. And it shall be kept for the congregation of the sons of Israel for water of impurity." Now, I know that they need the ashes for the ones that they're going to burn here soon. Here it seems they need the ashes for this. It is a... Israel for a water, it is a purging offering. That just sounds so weird to me. "And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, and shall lay them up outside the camp in a clean place. And it shall be kept for the congregation of the sons of Israel for a water of impurity. It is a purging offering." I guess I'm not sure how that works, but somehow the ashes are going to make the keep the water clean? I could be interpreting that horribly. I can hear my daughter's thing in the background. Dude, those tablets are loud. She's got an iPad Mini 6. It's a lot louder than you'd think. That thing's just as loud as my laptop. It's incredible. All right, carrying on, we are on chapter 19, verse 10. "And he that gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and shall be unclean until the evening, and it shall be the sons of Israel unto the stranger that lives among them for a never-ending statute. He that touches the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days." Ooh. EMTs, coroners, okay. "He shall cleanse himself for it on the third day, and on the seventh day he shall be clean. If he does not cleanse himself on the third day, then on the seventh day he shall not be clean. Anyone who touches the dead body, the body of a man who dies, and does not cleanse himself, he shall have defiled the tabernacle of Jehovah, and that person shall be cut off from Israel. For the water of impurity shall not be sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean, his uncleanliness shall be still on him." Well, I mean, that just makes sense, right? Like the germs and stuff, things that can get you sick, like you need to clean that off. You need to, you know, what a weird thing that this is telling you, basically, if you touch something dead, take a bath, right? If you get around these unclean things, make sure that you clean yourself from it so it doesn't infect you. And that's something we deal with to this day, right? That just makes perfect sense. Weird how it's being brought to them. You wonder what they were doing before, you know? just rummaging around on dead people's bodies and walking away like they just got blood stains on their hands, even though they didn't murder anybody. Yeah, anyway, this is the law when a man dies in a tent. In a tent? When a man dies in a tent, everyone who comes into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every open vessel which has no covering of thread on it shall be unclean. And whoever in the open field touches one that has been pierced with a sword, or one that has died of himself, or the bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. I don't understand that. And whoever in the open field touches one that has been pierced with a sword. Okay, so killed in battle, or one that has died of himself. Is that committed suicide? Or the bone of a man, you found just bones, or a grave, shall be unclean for 7 days. And for the unclean, they shall take the ashes of the burning of the purging offering, and running water in a vessel shall be put on it. And a clean person shall take hyssop, and shall dip it in the water, and shall sprinkle it upon the tent, and upon all the vessels, and upon the persons that were there, and upon him that touched the bone or the slain. Is that how that's worded? Upon him that touched the bone, or the slain, or the dead, or the grave. And the person shall sprinkle on the unclean on the third day. That is what that says too. And the person, and the clean person shall sprinkle on the unclean on the third day. And on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall purify himself. And he shall wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and shall be clean at evening. But the man that shall be unclean, and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from the midst of the congregation, because he has defiled the sanctuary of Jehovah. The water for impurity has not been sprinkled on him, he shall be unclean. And it shall be a never-ending statute to them, and he that sprinkles the water of sprinkling shall wash his clothes, and he touches the water of sprinkling shall be unclean. That just confused me. Ugh. Let's do that again. And it shall be a never-ending statute to them. And he that sprinkles the water of sprinkling shall wash his clothes. And he touches, he who touches the water of sprinkling shall be unclean until evening. And whatever the unclean person touches shall be unclean. And the soul that touches it shall be unclean until evening. It says unclean, they left out the C. And the other one, they left out the word who. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Now, I know that they messed up because there's a space there. Like, it's an extra gap. There should be a word there, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe he didn't hit the buttons hard enough for it to actually touch the paper on a typewriter. You know, anyway. I couldn't imagine trying to do this. I would think it was done on a computer just because of how narrow these are. It would be a heck of a thing to try and type this out on a typewriter, you know, 2-inch sentences. That'd be a thing. But yeah, that's the end of chapter 19. We'll pick up on chapter 20 when we come back. Like I said, this is just practice run to see if I'm going to, for now on, just keep this microphone right next to me. I do, honestly, like, I can hear myself way better doing this the whole time. I don't feel like I'm fading in and out as much because I'm moving away, you know, closer or farther from the mic. It just keeps it right here. It's just really how much more of the background noise and how much of the cords, because there's a headphones hanging from this thing, and then there's an audio cord that's plugged into my phone hanging from this thing. And every time those things touch or tap, I can hear it, the headphones. But a lot of times, things like that don't actually get picked up on the recording. So this is to find out if it does, because this is a much more comfortable way for me to read this. And if I can get away with doing this, I think I'm going to move along a lot faster. There's a guy on YouTube named Barry Stepp. He's got a channel. He does like crazy TikTok videos. He shows them to you, and conspiracy stuff goes over it. But he's got a microphone that's got what's called a Don King, or what he calls a Don King cover on it. It looks like Don King's hair. But the way he holds and kind of does that, like it seems simpler. And so I'm trying to see if I can get away with doing that too. And I'm probably gonna upgrade my mic to do it. And like I said, there are three people listen to this. I'm one of them. I don't know if, I think one also, you just get one listen when you upload it, because I don't know if they claim that their bots listen, and that's how it's approved to go on there. But the moment you publish it, you get one listen. Like, I don't know, Spotify listened to it or something. So it means just one other person has actually listened to any of these. So I don't know if that's my ex-wife. If it is, hi, Harley. If it's not, whatever. But yeah, we're going to stop there. We're on chapter 20. And right after the ending here, there's going to be a little insert that I heard on a short on YouTube that is just, it's just a great response to anyone demanding that you follow their crazy ideas, right? Or whatever it is they think, you know what I mean? That, because really, when you're telling somebody, you need to identify me like this, what you're saying is that you're above that person, you have authority over that person, and that they need to listen to you. And yeah, we're equals here. You doing that to me means that you're disregarding all my feelings, because what if I feel like I shouldn't have to do that, right? Who are you to tell me how to think? I guess that's the basis of it. Anyway, when we come back, we'll be on chapter 20. Until then, you guys have a great day or night, and go with God.
The language we use matters. Being specific is important. If you care about the truth. I refuse to participate. I'm not adopting your language. I'm not respecting your preferences. You don't own reality. You don't own grammar. You don't own definitions. You're not important enough to provide me with an instruction manual on how to talk to you. Are you kidding? How important do you have to think you are?